The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we are on board with you.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. Coming up on today's show, we'll get an update on the ongoing port molar test fishery and take a look at the latest genetic stock composition estimates. We'll also hear about why the largest grocery supplier in the United States likely won't have any frozen salmon products from Alaska on their shelves this year. All of that and more is coming up on today's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. But first, here are the latest announcements from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon with an announcement for commercial permit holders in the Naknek-Quijek District. The time is 3 p.m. and the date is Saturday, June 29th. The midnight to 6 a.m. sockeye estimate past the Naknek Tower was 30,000 for a cumulative escapement of 360,000. For the Quijek River, the midnight to 6 a.m. count was 50,000 for a cumulative escapement of 310,000. The N River estimate for the Quijek is 200,000. The allocation split through June 28th is 84% drift, 9% Naknek set, and 7% Quijek set. The current set gillnet period in the Naknek-Quijek District will be extended 25 and a half hours and will close at 3 a.m. on Monday, July 1st. The Naknek section of the Naknek-Quijek District will open to drift gillnet gear for two periods. The first, a 7-hour period from 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. on Sunday, June 30th, and then again from 7:30 p.m. Sunday, June 30th, until 3 a.m. Monday, July 1st, a 7.5-hour period. The next announcement for the Naknek-Quijek District will be at 3 p.m. on Sunday, June 30th. This has been the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Dillingham with an announcement regarding commercial fishing in the Nooshigak District. This is Westside Salmon Announcement Number 18, issued Saturday, June 29th at 12 p.m. The cumulative Wood River sockeye salmon escapement at 6 a.m. was 779,000. Agushik River escapement is 159,000. The Nooshigak River sockeye salmon escapement through June 28th was 659,000. The king salmon escapement was 63,827. There are 369 permits registered to fish in the Nooshigak District. The commercial harvest yesterday was 240,000 sockeye salmon, making the cumulative harvest 1.62 million. As previously announced, commercial fishing with drift gillnets in the Nooshigak District will be open from 10 p.m. June 29th until 6 a.m. June 30th. Commercial fishing with drift gillnets will reopen in the Nooshigak District for 10 hours from 10 a.m. until 8 p.m. June 30th, and again for 8 hours from 12 a.m. July 1st until 8 a.m. July 1st. This has been the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Dillingham.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in King Salmon with the announcement for Igigik and Ugashik District commercial fishermen. The time of this announcement is 12 noon and the date is Saturday, June 29th. In Igigik, catch from yesterday's opener was 400,000. Through June 28th, cumulative harvest is 2.5 million. Escapement on Friday was 90,000, and cumulative escapement is 514,000. Commercial fishing will be permitted in the Igigik District with set gillnets from 5:15 p.m. Saturday, June 29th, until 1:15 a.m. Sunday, June 30th, an 8-hour period, and again from 5 a.m. until 1 p.m. Sunday, June 30th, another 8 hours. Commercial fishing with drift gillnets will be permitted from 5:30 p.m. until 11:59 p.m. Saturday, June 29th, a 6.5 hour period, and again from 5:30 a.m. until 12:30 p.m. Sunday, June 30th, a 7 hour period. In Ugashik, escapement on Friday was 37,000. Through June 28th, cumulative escapement is 48,000 and is several days ahead of the curve for the state. Commercial fishing will be permitted with set gillnet gear from 2:30 p.m. until 11:59 p.m. Saturday, June 29th, a 9.5 hour period. Commercial fishing with drift gillnet gear will be permitted from 3:30 p.m. until 9:30 p.m. Saturday, June 29th, a 6 hour period. Fishermen in both districts should stand by at 12 noon Sunday, June 30th, for the next possible announcement. This has been the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon.
This is KDLG Dillingham. You're listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. Friday's sockeye harvest in Bristol Bay topped 1 million fish to push the season total to over 7.9 million. The district that's still out in front in regards to harvest is the Igigik District, where fishermen hauled in 400,000 sockeye Friday to push the district total to over 2.5 million. Next up is the Naknek-Quijack District, where fishermen hauled in 365,000 sockeye on Friday to push the district total to over 2.3 million fish. Fishermen in the Inushagak District hauled in 250,000 sockeye Friday to push the district total to over 1.6 million. There was no harvest Friday in the Ugashik District, and the total currently stands at 1.4 million. Fishermen in the Togiak District harvested 1,000 sockeye Friday to push the district total to 19.3 thousand fish. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game reports that on average, there were 742 sockeye per drift delivery on Friday in the Igigik District, and the number was 705 in the Naknek-Quijack District. In the Nushagak District, the drifters had, on average, 377 sockeye per drift delivery, and the number was 176 in the Togiak District. Fish and Game reports that there are currently 1,532 drift permits registered to fish in Bristol Bay as of 9 o'clock this morning. 502 of those permits are in the Naknek-Quijack District, 375 are in the Igigik District. There are 369 drift permits registered in the Nushagak District and 233 in the Ugashik District. Currently, there are 53 drift permits registered in the Togiak District. The Baywide drift permit total is expected to increase up to 1,665 in 48 hours, with 97 of those permits going to the Naknek-Quijack District. An additional 21 permits will go to the Igigik District, 12 permits will go to the Nushagak District, just 3 additional permits will go to the Ugashik District. As of 9 o'clock this morning, there are 1,268 drift vessels registered in Bristol Bay, with 419 of those vessels in the Naknek-Quijack District, 307 vessels are registered in the Nushagak District, 305 in the Igigik District. There are 184 vessels registered in the Ugashik District. Fish and Game reports that in 48 hours, the vessel count will increase to 1,363, with 67 of those additional drift vessels going to the Naknek-Quijack District. 14 additional vessels will be headed to the Igigik District, 12 will go to the Nushagak District, and just 2 additional vessels will be added to the total in the Ugashik District in 48 hours. Currently, there are 264 D-boats registered in Bristol Bay, with 83 D-boats in the Naknek-Quijack District. The count is 70 in the Igigik District and 62 in the Nushagak. There are currently 49 D-boats operating in the Ugashik District. Fish and Game reports that in 48 hours, the D-boat count in the bay will increase up to 302, with an additional 7 D-boats in the Igigik District. 30 additional D-boats will be going to the Naknek-Quijack District, while the count in the Nushagak District will remain unchanged at 62. Just 1 additional D-boat will come online in the Ugashik District in 48 hours. Now taking a look at escapement, another 37.1 thousand sockeye were counted to the Ugashic River Friday to increase the total to 47.8 thousand. Fish and Game's estimating that there are another 125,000 sockeye in the Ugashic River that have not yet been counted as escapement. Friday was a big escapement day to the Igigik River, with 89.5 thousand sockeye counted to increase the total to 514.2 thousand fish. Fish and Game's estimating there are another 50,000 sockeye in the Igigik River that have not yet been counted as escapement. Sockeye escapement to the Quijack River was counted at 71,000 fish on Friday to increase the total to 262.3 thousand. Fish and Game's estimating there are another 200,000 sockeye in the Quijack River that have not yet been counted as escapement. Friday's escapement to the Naknek River was 93,000 sockeye to increase the total to 330.7 thousand fish. Over in the Nooshigak District, all three rivers have met their escapement goals. 44.4 thousand sockeye were counted in the Wood River to increase the total to 765,000. Nooshigak River escapement was 18.5 thousand fish on Friday to push the total to nearly 659,000, and 9.3 thousand sockeye were counted to the Agushik River Friday to push the total to 156.6 thousand. The counting towers on the Togiak River are expected to be up and counting on July the 3rd. Total run to Bristol Bay through Friday is now just over 11 million sockeye. The daily run summaries can be found on the ADF&G Bristol Bay website, and the summaries are also posted at the Fish and Game offices in Dillingham and King Salmon. And catches as part of the ongoing Port Molar test fishery picked up Friday after a couple of days of lower-than-expected catches. Test fisheries run by the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute, which is a subsidiary of the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. Scott Rayburn is a data analyst with BBSRI. He says Friday's uptick in catches is not unusual.
You very often see a bimodal entry at Port Molar. I don't know that that's what this is, but it could be, and it bodes very well for what's going to happen in shore.
Of the 239 sockeye taken in the test fishery Friday, 129 were taken at Station 6, 71 fish were taken at Station 8, 21 fish were taken at Station 4, 10 fish were taken at Station 10. The catch at Station 2 was just 4 fish. In the interpretation of the catches issued Friday night, Rayburn noted that the uptick in the daily replacement index number from 26 on Thursday to 44 on Friday shifts the estimated day of peak passage at Port Molar.
Yesterday's data point shifted the peak day of passage. It was about, I was estimating June 20.5, and now it's June 21.5, so somewhere around the 21st, 22nd. We still think it's early at Port Molar, but it remains to be seen how early.
The Port Molar test fisheries run in an effort to give stakeholders in Bristol Bay's commercial sockeye fishery a sense of what is just days away from the inshore districts. However, for the data to be truly useful for fishermen and processors, they need to know the travel time between the test fishery area and the inshore districts. Rayburn admits that it's difficult to pinpoint that travel time.
If you have very early peaks at Port Molar, sometimes the travel time between Molar and shore will be extended, and it will sort of dampen the earliness in shore. So you have a very early peak on the 21st or 22nd at Molar. Sometimes you can get a 10 or even 11-day travel time, and that makes the peak in shore still early, but not as early as you would expect, not as early as Port Molar.
Rayburn says a look at the genetics and the inshore catch and escapement seems to indicate a varying travel time for sockeye.
Seems to. I was looking at the latest round of the genetics, and the Igigik travel time, it's difficult to line up, but it's looking like 6 days to me. Naknek, Quijack, maybe 6 days. Nooshigak, 9 days. Ugashik doesn't really line up, or it's a very much longer travel time, but I couldn't make sense of that one. Overall, my best guess in short, I'm thinking maybe 9 days.
If the peak at Port Molar was June 22nd and you factor in a 9-day travel time, that puts the inshore peak on the 1st of July, which is Monday. Rayburn suggests that Friday's catch might be the only data point out of the test fishery for a couple of days.
And unfortunately, the crew is blown off the water today and is not going to be able to fish, and doubtful they're going to be able to fish tomorrow and possibly the next day.
There's currently a gale warning in effect for the area from Port Hyden to Cape Sarachef, which includes the area fished as part of the Port Molar test fishery. Strong south to southeast winds are expected to continue tonight and Sunday, with winds changing to come out of the southwest on Monday, with seas of 9 to 11 feet. The cumulative daily replacement index number is currently 644. Cumulative traditional index number is now 1,578. That is well below the all-time high of 2,171 recorded back in 2009, but it is still above the average of 1,484. The Port Moeller test fishery got started on the 10th of June and is scheduled to run through July 10th. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The report will continue in just a moment with the latest genetics from the catch at Port Moeller. Listening to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on KDLG. The latest genetic stock composition estimates from the fish caught as part of the Port Moeller test fishery show continued strength for sockeye bound for the Igigik and Quijack rivers. The estimates from the fish caught on June the 25th and 26th shows that 22.8% of the sockeye were headed to the Igigik River, 27.8% are bound for the Quijack River. 11.5% of the sockeye showed a genetic signal for the Ugashik River, and 11.8% were apparently bound for the Naknek River. For the Nooshigak District, the latest estimates show that 11.2% of the sockeye were bound for the Nooshigak River, and 10.8% were headed to the Wood River. Only 0.6% of the sockeye showed a genetic signal for the Agushik River. 1.3% of the analyzed sockeye showed a genetic signal for the Togiak River, and another 1.3% showed a signal for the Alagnak River. Fish and Game reports that 0.8% of the analyzed sockeye showed a genetic signal for the North Peninsula. Those fish were harvested on June the 25th and the 26th. Using a 6 to 9 day travel time puts those fish in the inshore district sometime next week. On Friday, Fish and Game also released the genetic stock composition estimates for the sockeye caught on June the 23rd and the 24th. Using a 6 to 9 day travel time puts those fish in the inshore district sometime today or in the next couple of days. 27.9% of the sockeye analyzed showed a genetic signal for the Naknek River. 22.2% were apparently headed to the Quijack River. 22.7% of the fish were bound for the Igigik River, and 8% were apparently headed to the Ugashik River. 9.1% of the analyzed sockeye showed a genetic signal for the Wood River, and 6.6% were apparently bound for the Nooshigak. Just 1.3% were headed to the Ugashik River, and 1.9% were bound for the Alagnak River. There was no genetic signal detected for Togiak River sockeye. The genetic stock composition estimates were generated using 380 sockeye caught between June the 23rd and the 26th as part of the ongoing Port Moeller test fishery. The sockeye were analyzed at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Gene Conservation Laboratory in Anchorage. Following a short battle with pneumonia, Ron Rawson of Kirkland, Washington, passed away on May the 17th of this year. He was 84 years old. Rawson founded Ron Rawson Boats in 1959, initially building some of the first fiberglass sailboats on the West Coast. He then branched out to powerboats and eventually designed and built commercial fishing vessels used extensively here in Alaska. Robin Samuelson from Dillingham remembers when the first Ron Rawsons arrived in Bristol Bay.
You know, most of the people around here had wood boats at the time. And there was a few fiberglass boats and a few aluminum boats. But Ron Rawson delivered to Bristol Bay a 32-footer Ron Rawson that at the time was about $19,000, a brand-new boat. And it took off like wildfire. Nobody's seen a boat like that for Bristol Bay. It was good in rough seas. It was a shallow draft boat, so you could use it to haul fuel up to your village in the fall time, regardless of what the water level was. And it was a great all-around fishing boat, and he hit it on the nail when he designed the original Ron Rawson.
Rawson was known to be especially proud of working with Togiak fishermen to develop the 29-foot bow picker known as the Togiak Skiff, many of which are still in use. He also designed 38-foot seiners used in the Chignicks, and of course the 32-foot gillnetter that Samuelson says is seen fishing all over Bristol Bay, even today.
excellent boats, and there's a lot of them fishing in every bay today. And you can see them being traded on Deck Boss, and not everybody can afford these big fancy aluminum boats that are in excess of $400,000, $500,000 and still remain economically viable in the fishery. But if you get into the fishery and you need to buy a permit and you need a good used boat, a Rossin is a good used boat even today.
Rossin was born in Seattle, graduated from Washington State University with a chemistry degree, and spent time in the U.S. Air Force. He spent his free time boating, skiing, and touring the world, often as a passenger on cargo ships. He is survived by his wife, Jenny, four children, and five grandchildren. A celebration of life service is to be held later this summer. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible, in part, by AIFMA, the Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association, 1-800-816-3741.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. The largest grocery supplier in the United States is Walmart. As a matter of fact, the company's the largest retailer on Earth. On Thursday, Walmart announced that it will only be accepting frozen salmon products that carry the Marine Stewardship Council's sustainability label. Last year, most of the major seafood processors that do business in Alaska withdrew their support from the MSC label, resulting in no certification for this year's salmon pack out of Alaska. That, coupled with Walmart's decision to only stock MSC-certified fish, seems to indicate that frozen salmon products made with salmon from Alaska will not be available on Walmart store shelves this year. What does that mean for Alaska's salmon fisheries? Well, it depends on who you talk to. Norm Van Vactor is the CEO of the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation based in Dillingham.
I think what it certainly does, it just raises the level of uncertainty now to yet a higher degree. And given the size and the magnitude and the volume of fish that Walmart moves and is capable of moving, it certainly is a blow to the industry in Alaska as we know it today. And one, either the industry will adapt to that and potentially make some changes and modifications to our stand and position, or Walmart over time becomes more accepting of other certification processes, because Walmart is a customer we cannot afford to lose, and we don't want to lose, and we will not lose.
One of the major seafood processors that has led the charge in withdrawing support for the MSC certification for the commercial salmon fisheries in Alaska is Ocean Beauty Seafoods, which has a major presence in Bristol Bay. The Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation holds a 50% interest in Ocean Beauty, but Van Vactor asserts that BBEDC won't try and force Ocean Beauty to change its stance.
We have a high degree of confidence in the management team that runs Ocean Beauty Seafoods, and we do not get involved in their day-to-day business. I think you know my opinion and the opinions of others on our board, and we certainly share those opinions. But again, as it relates to the day-to-day, month-to-month activities and direction of Ocean Beauty, we have a high degree of confidence in the management team that is in place there, and we work with them accordingly.
Walmart's announcement that they were only going to stock MSC-certified salmon came as a shock to many observers of the salmon markets, including John Sacton. He's the editor of SeafoodNews.com, and he posted a scathing editorial on the website on Thursday. Sacton believes that Walmart's decision points to a conflict between the company and the fisheries management structure in Alaska, which Sacton labels the best management system on Earth.
And what this has kind of brought to the fore, in my view, is the fact that Walmart and the other retailers really need to ask themselves, do they support U.S. fishery management goals and objectives or not? Because the way they're acting, they don't seem to support it. And what particularly struck me about this story and made me so angry was that Alaska has not been denying this potential issue of interaction between hatchery fish and wild fish. And they've just put on the table an approximately $5 billion research project to look at this specifically in Prince William Sound. So what's happening is that the Alaska salmon managers are moving forward on this issue, but Walmart is saying, we don't care about that unless you actually pay and partner up with our own NGO partner, in this case, Sustainable Fisheries Partnership, we don't really care what you're doing about Prince William Sound salmon. And to me, that's a travesty. And I think it reflects, as I said in my piece, more badly on Walmart than on Alaskan fishery managers and Alaska salmon.
While Alaska's commercial salmon fisheries have, for the time being, lost the MSC certification, there are other certifications in place, including the FAO-based Responsible Fisheries Management Certification, supported by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute and most of the large seafood processors that do business in Alaska. Tyson Fick is the communications director for ASME.
What I do find amazing is that America's largest retailer is saying they won't buy American seafood without the endorsement of a foreign-based environmental group while promoting foreign seafood with clearly inferior fisheries management and quality.
The MSC sustainability label and ASME's responsible fisheries management certification are just two of the growing list of eco-labels intended to ensure that seafood is sustainably managed. The labels have been gaining popularity in recent years as more and more customers want assurances the seafood they buy is wild-caught and does not come from fisheries that are overfished. SeafoodNews.com's John Sacton believes the whole eco-label movement is in transition.
You really got to think about it differently than you might have thought about it 10 years ago or 12 years ago when Alaska salmon fisheries first came into the MSC. And the reason it's in transition is, first of all, some of the problems that led of overfishing and so forth that led to the eco-label movement are being successfully addressed. Not only in Alaska, which wasn't really one of the problem areas, but in the rest of the U.S., for example, and in New Zealand and in Iceland and in Norway. I mean, here you have record cod catches in the Barents Sea. So the idea that without the MSC, cod is going to be an endangered species is just ludicrous. The fishery managers have been very successful. So I think that the climate has changed. And the other thing that's happened, I think, is that there's a very strong and widespread recognition on the part of fisheries, the producers and suppliers, that you need a open system for benchmarking sustainability. You can't put all your eggs in the hands of a single private organization. So even in Germany, the hotbed of the MSC, the German government is funding the project called the Global Seafood Sustainability Initiative, which will benchmark eco-labels and eventually make the MSC just one of many acceptable alternatives. The global retail food industry already uses this for agriculture products under Global GAP and stuff like that. And so I don't think that this idea that the MSC is the only game in town is something that is going to continue in the next 5 years.
Despite the criticisms of the eco-labels, they are an important tool used by customers to ensure the seafood products they buy are sustainably managed, and the MSC label is still the most respected of the many labels out there. The MSC label is also required to sell in many markets. As the seafood processors, suppliers, buyers, and users try and work it all out, one thing appears certain. You likely won't be able to find any frozen Alaska salmon products on the shelves of a Walmart store near you. That's significant because Walmart is the largest retailer on Earth and the largest grocer in the United States. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment. You're listening to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on KDLG Dillingham. A small cabin on the shores of Lake Elegnegik is the nerve center for a long-standing effort to track, predict, and understand the sockeye salmon run to Bristol Bay. The cabin is part of the University of Washington's Fisheries Research Institute, and every day researchers take in the available information about the run, they feed it into models, and then churn out an updated forecast. The most senior of the researchers is Ray Hilborn. He's a professor in the School of Aquatic and Fishery Sciences and is a world-renowned expert on fisheries, especially Bristol Bay salmon fishery. He says the predictions about the final run size depend on how early the run actually is.
Low 30s seems most likely. I should say that Curry has put together a data set we haven't used in the past, which is the South Peninsula catch. And there is some correlation down there between what they catch and what shows up here. And it's, again, on the stronger end of things. Pointing us, when we put it all together, pointing us in the low 30s, unless the run is unprecedentedly early. You know, if it's 1 or 2 or 3 days, which we've all seen. I don't think we've ever seen 5 days early. If it's 5 days early, it could be right around a high 20s, right in the forecast.
The preseason forecast put forward by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game anticipated the sockeye run to Bristol Bay would total out at about 26.3 million fish. Fisheries Research Institute puts out their own preseason forecast. Their forecast was a little larger at 28.1 million sockeye. Hilborn mentioned the South Peninsula fishery, and through Thursday, over 1.5 million sockeye have been harvested, with the majority, 989,000 to be exact, taken during the June South Unimak fishery. The general consensus is that this year's sockeye run to Bristol Bay is early, but Hilborn says it might take some time to figure out exactly how early it actually was.
We'll know it when it peaks and starts on its way down. But even then, there's always the question of how big is the tail? And sometimes the tail just drags on and on. So, you know, you might have, let's say you might have a total catch and escapement of 15 million by the time you've hit the peak and it starts down. But that could turn into a 25 million run or a 32 million run, depending upon how much tail there is. And there's really no way of knowing until it happens.
Earlier this week, the Fisheries Research Institute issued an in-season update that includes an updated forecast. Researchers are now predicting that the total sockeye run to Bristol Bay will total out at just over 32 million fish. That's nearly 4 million fish larger than the preseason forecast. One of the tools used by the researchers is the ongoing Port Mueller test fishery. However, they are selective in the data they use. Curry Cunningham is one of the researchers that follows the daily developments with the test fishery and the Bristol Bay sockeye run. He confirms that FRI only uses the catch in the 5 1/8-inch mesh panels.
The reason we do that is just because traditionally a 5 1/8-inch mesh was used, so we have a longer time series to which we can compare it and get a better sense of what cumulative catches to date actually represent in terms of overall run size, or predict in terms of overall run size. The other things we do is we assume sort of a normal distribution of fish across space, across the transect, so we can fill in missing stations based on how likely catches would have been if the stations weren't fished, and also across the season. We see a normal distribution of fishes caught at Port Mueller as the season progresses, so we can use that information paired with their distribution to get a better idea of what would have been caught in missing stations or days.
As part of their forecasting efforts, the FRI researchers put together age-specific forecasts. Latest such forecast calls for 9.7 million 1-2 sockeye to return to the bay this summer, along with 14.9 million 1-3 fish. 2-2 salmon are expected to total over 4.1 million, and they're forecasting the run will include 1.9 million 2-3 fish. While everyone seems to agree that this year's run is early, perhaps historically early, there's no such agreement that this year's run is significantly larger than the preseason forecasts. Hilborn says we won't really know until it's all over, but it's unlikely.
It would have to be extremely early to be on forecast, and it would have to be on time to be super big. So, when I say super big, I mean, say, high 30s, which isn't big in terms of recent history. It's only big compared to the preseason forecast, and the preseason forecast have been, you know, plus or minus 10-20% for the last years. But having said that, you know, preseason forecasts have in the past been 50% wrong. 1997, for instance, was run came in half of the forecast. So, is it possible that the run's going to be twice our forecast or 50% more? Certainly wouldn't rule it out. But right now, I think somewhat early and larger than forecast seems the most likely.
The researchers with FRI and the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute, which runs the Port Mueller test fishery, both believe the sockeye run through the Port Mueller fishery area peaked around the 21st of June, which is much earlier than the normal peak of around June 28th. In this week's FRI in-season report, they note that the historical record from 1990 to 2012 indicates that a peak of more than 6 days early has never occurred, and only once has the peak been exactly 6 days early. If the run through the Port Mueller area has peaked, what does that mean for the peak inshore? In this week's report, the FRI researchers note that there are no years in which a peak at Port Mueller prior to June the 26th was followed by a peak inshore later than July the 5th. They go on to suggest that a peak at Port Mueller that is 5 to 6 days early likely indicates a run that is 2 to 3 days early bay-wide. The average inshore peak is July the 6th. That means that if the data and the interpretation of the data is correct, the inshore peak could be sometime early next week. However, in the report, the researchers stressed that from 1965 through 2012, the run has never peaked more than 4 days early, and only six times has the run peaked exactly 4 days earlier than the average. If the run actually peaks 4 days early inshore, that puts the peak on the 2nd of July. That's this coming Tuesday. One of the big question marks for this season is if the Kwajalein River will continue the recent trend of coming in at or above the forecast. This year's Alaska Department of Fish and Game forecast calls for the sockeye run to the Kwajalein River to be just over 5 million fish strong. Hilborn says the river has definitely recovered from its low point in the late 90s and early 2000s.
There was a stretch of about 6 or 7 years in the 1990s when the returns per spawner were barely replacement. You know, historically, Kwajalein is sort of a 2 fish coming back for every spawner. And in there, those the brood years of the early to mid-90s were running an average of 1. It just wasn't replacing itself. And now it's kicked up about the last 6 or 7 broods that we have. So this would go back. The last one would be, I think, 06 fish that spawned in 06. We've got pretty well complete. So those late 90s, early late 90s into the mid 2000s, in terms of recruits per spawner, it's back. Yeah, but what we haven't seen there is anything like the big returns that it has produced in the past. Are we ever going to see another 50 million Kwajalein return year? Well, I suspect the answer is yes, but I may not be. You know, it'll happen again, I suspect, but. I don't think in the immediate future.
The University of Washington's Salmon Research Program in Alaska got started in 1946, and the program has a permanent field station on the shores of Lake Alegnagik. The university's Fisheries Research Institute was created in 1948. FRI is credited with developing the very simple system to count salmon escapement using counting towers, as well as conducting research that allows stakeholders to better understand the Bristol Bay salmon resource. And that concludes today's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The report can be found online at kdlg.org. And if you have something to add to our show, please include corrections, tips, or background information. Send me an email. The address is mike@kdlg.org. And please join me Sunday afternoon at 4 for the next Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Until then, please be safe and watch the weather. And to end our program today, we pay tribute to a good friend, a lover of life, and a consummate musician. Ray Garrity, known to his friends as King Ray, passed away on Wednesday in an ATV accident on the Kenai Peninsula. He'll be missed. We leave you with a snippet from a 2008 performance of King Ray's band, Ragin' Cajun. Ray, keep the music alive. You're listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm your host, Mike Mason.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery. Through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality, the Bristol Bay RSDA, we are on board with you.